ask many, many questions. Many, many, many questions about the creation, mostly about the creation of the universe and the order, the final order of the creation, how it was ordered, the divisions of different varieties. Now, after Vidura asked these questions of Maitreya, in chapter 8, Maitreya begins his response. And chapter 8 is the beginning of the response of Maitreya, which is described as the beginning of Maitreya's speaking of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, this speaking of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we remember, has been spoken before. Certainly, the entirety, the 12 cantos of the Bhagavatam, are an expansion of this, which has again been spoken before for the first time in the second canto, at the end of the second canto, when Lord Brahma performs austerities, and he sees, by virtue of those austerities, in devotional service, he pleases Lord Vishnu, Lord Narayan. Actually, as it turns out, it is Lord Krishna, who then reveals to him the himself, the spiritual world, and empowers him to create the universe. So this is what was spoken in the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam in chapter 9 and canto 2. And more or less that same thing has been spoken of in the beginning of this canto. Now it's going to be spoken of again. This is the second time the creation will be described in this third canto. And again it will be described at the end of the third canto when Kapila Muni explains the fundamental principles of material nature to his mother, Devahuti. Now, in this particular explanation of the creation, in which the Bhagavatam is spoken, it is slightly different from the other explanations of the creation. And this one is of a partial, a creation after a partial dissolution of the universe. There is a total dissolution of the universe when there is nothing left at all. And that is after the 100 years of Lord Brahma's life are completed. So the entire universe, the universe from the beginning must be created again. But then, after every night of Lord Brahma, and actually this is going to be described later, the different kinds of dissolutions, but after every night of Lord Brahma, there is a dissolution, a partial dissolution. And this is what's going to be described here. And the emphasis on this one, as we'll see, is not the beginning stages of the creation of the elements and the creation of the universal form. But this is after Lord Brahma, or this really begins when Lord Brahma is born. In other words, when Garbhadakshay Vishnu enters into the universe, and from his navel, the lotus flower almost erupts through his navel, and the totality of the material ingredients, including the Vrata Rupa, this is all contained in the lotus flower on which Lord Brahma is born. So this has to do with, again, with the creation of the universe. Because we see the universe. We cannot easily see Krishna. And we heard in the second canto why we cannot see Krishna, because, for instance, Brahma could not see Krishna either until he satisfied Krishna with his intense desire to serve Krishna in devotional service. And that intense desire naturally brings forward activities done not for our own pleasure, but for Krishna's pleasure. So when activities are done for Krishna's pleasure, that is called tapasya or austerity. So when Brahma had achieved maturity in his tapasya or austerity, then he was able to see Krishna by Krishna's grace. So we're going to reach that point or hear about that and what he saw. So this is very similar, again, to, or rather not exactly similar, but it is overlapping, adding more details from a different perspective to what's been described earlier in the third canto and towards the end of the second canto as well. So we'll start reading it, and then the purports aren't very long in this chapter. Let's see how much we'll do. We'll be able to get done. What do we have in the assignments? We're going to spend 2 days on this chapter. So let's see what we do. So the great sage Maitreya Muni said to Vidura, "The royal dynasty of King Puru is worthy to serve the pure devotees because all the descendants of that family are devoted to the personality of Godhead. You..." It says Puruvangs. It's the same family as the Yaru dynasty, as the Puru family, as the sons of Yayati. Puru and Yadu were both sons of Jayati. Pururava is the one who had the dealings with Urvasi. He's also called Aila. And in the 11th canto, there's a chapter called the Aila Gita, which is very important and very nice. About renunciation. So in any case, because Maitreya Muni is saying that Vidura is born in the Puru family dynasty, because they are devotees, and Prabhupada explains in the purport that they are not impersonalists. So because they are devotees and not impersonalists, Maitreya Muni is very happy to be speaking to them. "It is wonderful that because of your attempt, the transcendental pastimes of the Lord are becoming newer and newer at every moment." In other words, because of his attempt to understand, that means his receptivity in hearing, that is drawing out the enthusiasm of Maitreya Muni. So this also Prabhupada describes this in the purport. He even says that he considered the company of Vidura, this is Prabhupada's purport, because he was very enthusiastic by Vidura's association. "He considered the company of Vidura most desirable because such association can accelerate one's dormant propensity for devotional service due to the sincerity of the hearer." The pure devotee Maitreya, his devotion was being pulled out. "Let me now begin speaking on the Bhagavata Purana." Because Maitreya was already a speaker of the Puranas. So Bhagavata Purana is the major Purana, "which was directly spoken to the great sages by the personality of Godhead for the benefit of those who are entangled in extreme miseries for the sake of very little pleasure." This is the situation of everyone in the world, that So many miseries come, and people are entangled in the miseries because they have tried to squeeze pleasure, enjoyment out of the material world. So a little enjoyment comes, and too much miseries come. So we don't get what we want, we don't get what satisfies us at all. Here's Prabhupada's purport. It's explaining the cause of the miserable condition of the living entity. "The sage Maitreya proposed to speak on Srimad Bhagavatam, because it was especially compiled and traditionally comes down in the disciplic succession for the solution of all the problems of human society. Lokasya janato purusham vidvan chakre satvita samhita anartha upasam shakshad bhakti yoga rukshade. That the living entities don't know that the causes of their misery is their desire, their attachment to anartha, those things that have no value. Those things that are unnecessary. Attachment to those things, material pleasures, is the cause of our misery. And because the living entities don't know that, lokasya ajanato, therefore, the great sage Vyasadeva compiled this Srimad Bhagavatam. Only one who is fortunate can have the opportunity to hear Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of pure devotees of the Lord. Under the spell of material energy, the living entities are entrapped in the bondage of many difficulties simply for the sake of a little bit of material happiness. They engage in fruitive activities, not knowing the implications. Just working to gain so much material pleasure, but we only get a little pinch. And so much misery comes our way. Under the false impression that the body is the self, the living entities foolishly relate to so many false attachments. They think that they can engage with materialistic paraphernalia forever. This gross misconception of life is so strong that a person suffers continually life after life under the external energy of the Lord. If one comes in contact with the book Bhagavatam as well as with the devotee Bhagavata, who knows what the Bhagavatam is, then such a fortunate man gets out of the material entanglement. Therefore, Sri Maitreya Muni, out of compassion for the suffering men in the world, proposes to speak on the Srimad Bhagavatam first and last, means only on the Bhagavatam. So here he begins now to tell the history of his hearing the Bhagavatam, different from how Srila Vyasadeva heard the Bhagavatam. He heard it by direct revelation, or how Maharaj Prickett heard the Bhagavatam, who heard it directly from Sukadev Goswami, and then Sutta Goswami heard it from Sukadev Goswami and spoke it to the sages of Namasharanya. But this is a different hearing of the Bhagavatam that Maitreya heard. Some time ago, being inquisitive to know Sanat Kumara, the chief of the boy saints, accompanied by other great sages, inquired exactly like you about the truths regarding Vasudev, the Supreme, from Lord Shankarshan, who is seated at the bottom of the universe. At that time, Lord Shankarshan was meditating upon his Supreme Lord, whom the learned esteem as Lord Vasudev. But for the sake of the advancement of the great learned sages, he slightly opened his lotus-like eyes, and he began to speak. The sages came from the highest planets down to the lower region through the water of the Ganges, and therefore the hair in their heads was wet. They touched the lotus feet of the Lord, which are worshipped with various paraphernalia by the daughters of the Serpent King when they desire good husbands. The four Kumaras, headed by Sanat Kumar, who all knew the transcendental pastimes of the Lord, glorified the Lord in rhythmic accents with selected words full of affection and love. At that time, Lord Shankarshan, with his thousands of raised hoods, began to radiate in effulgence from the glowing stones on his head. So Lord Shankarshan was very happy to receive the sages and began from his position at the bottom of the universe to speak the Bhagavatam to them. And then the sage, Sanat Kumar, who was the prime hearer of the Bhagavatam at this time, he in his turn, when inquired of by Sankhyayana Muni, so when Sankhyayana Muni inquired from Sanat Kumar about these same truths, about the Lord, about Vasudev, Vasudeva means the all-pervading truth. He, Sanat Kumar, explained Srimad Bhagavatam as he heard it from Shankarsan. And the great sage, Sankhyayana, was the chief amongst the transcendentalists. And when he was describing the glories of the Lord in terms of Srimad Bhagavatam, it so happened that my spiritual master, Parasara, and Brihaspati both heard him. So the great sage Parasara, as aforementioned, began being so advised by the great sage Pulastya, spoken to me the foremost of the Puranas, the Bhagavatam. So Maitreya is, after explaining how he heard this truth, he says, I shall also describe this before you, my dear son, in terms of my hearing, because you are always my faithful follower. Prabhupada explains in the purport, just an interesting history. The great sage of the name Pulastya is the father of all demonic descendants. Once upon a time, this is how Parasara heard. Once upon a time, Parasara began a sacrifice in which all the demons were to be burnt to death because his father had been killed and devoured by one of them. The great sage Vasishtha Muni arrived at the sacrifice and requested Parasara to stop the deadly action. And because of Vasishtha's position and respect in the community of sages, Parasara could not deny the request. Parasara, having stopped the sacrifice, Pulastya, the father of the demons, appreciated his Brahminical temperament and gave him the blessing that in the future he would be a great speaker on the Vedic literature called the Puranas, the supplement of the Vedas. Parasara's action was appreciated by Pulastya because Parasara had forgiven the demons out of his Brahminical power of forgiveness. This is considered the special quality of a Brahmin, that he can forgive. This is the jewel of qualities, actually, also of a Vaishnava, that they can forgive. They don't keep grudges. Parasara was able to demolish all the demons in the sacrifice, but he considered, demons are so made that they devour living creatures, men and animals. But why on that account should I withdraw my Brahminical qualification of forgiveness? It's their nature. So he considered that their nature was to kill and eat, and my nature is to forgive. So when they're acting according to their nature, even though it's horrible, why should I cease to act for my nature, which is Brahminical? So, in this way, Parasara achieved the blessings of another sage, Pulastya. So what did Maitreya Muni hear in this line of disciplic succession coming from Shankarsan? So he describes the time of the partial devastation. At that time, when the three worlds were submerged in water, Garbhadakshay Vishnu was alone, lying on his bedstead, the great snake Ananta. And although he appeared to be in slumber in his own internal potency, freed from the actions of the internal external energy, his eyes were not completely closed. So in other words, this is the time of the partial devastation and it is time for the creation of the universe to begin. At that time, there is only Garbhadakshay Vishnu. All the material energy is wound up within him. Just like the strength of fire within fuel wood. Because, in other words, the creation remained within Garbhadakshay Vishnu in the same way that fire remains within wood. It is not manifest in the wood, but it is there nonetheless. And when you take the match or whatever, the lighter, then the fire gradually manifests from the wood and it begins to burn. But if it was not in there, if that energy was not in the wood, No amount of fire could make it burn. So all that energy, actually a fire within wood, is the energy of the sun. All fuels burn because of the energy of the sun stored within them. So similarly, as fire is unmanifest within the wood, similarly, the entirety of the material creation was unmanifest, for it was within the Lord. So, the Lord remained within the water of dissolution, submerging all the living entities in their subtle bodies. He lay in the self-invigorated energy called kala. And Prabhupada explains in the purport that the kala energy means the avidya energy, the material energy. The Lord laid down for 4,000 yuga cycles in His internal potency, and by His external energy He appeared to be sleeping within the water. When the living entities were coming out for further development of their fruit of activity, so all the living entities, they go within Krishna during the dissolutions of the universe, but they have their karma with them. So it is temporarily stopped. So what does karma do? Karma means desires. The karma, practically speaking, is stored with desires. And yayatam mam prapadyante, Krishna and the material energy reciprocate with our desires. So as long as we have material desires, that means we are suffering from sinful reactions. Sinful reactions, even if they are good desires, they're sinful in the sense that they are material. So as long as we have desires, we have material desires, we have to remain in the material world to fulfill those desires. That is Krishna's mercy. So the living entities, even though when they die, when there is a dissolution of their body, it is not that they die, but rather, according to their desires, their life, those desires will be continued to be fulfilled in future lives. Just like when we go to sleep at night, we can consider that like a partial devastation of the body. We go to sleep at night and we forget all our desires. And then when we wake up in the morning, first we're a little bewildered, we can't remember who we are, where we came from, what we have to do, but gradually, the day forms again, and we remember all the things our duties and the things that propel us throughout the day. So the living entities, when they are within the Lord during this partial devastation, they keep their subtle bodies with them, and they keep therefore their desires, and therefore their karma, and therefore when they again come out, they pick up again with activities according to where they left off. Prabhupada explains in the purport. In the Vishnu Purana, Kala Shakti is mentioned as avidya, the symptom of the influence of the Kala Shakti, or ignorance. Avidya means ignorance. Is that one has to work in the material world for fruit of actions, fruit of results. The fruit of workers are described in Bhagavad Gita as mudha, foolish. Such foolish living entities are very enthusiastic to work for some temporary benefit within perpetual bondage. What a sentence. Such foolish living entities are very enthusiastic to work for some temporary benefit within perpetual bondage. That really sums up material existence. It's like someone being in prison and they're very happy to remain in prison as long as they get a sweet every day. If they have to work very hard to get a sweet, they'll stay in prison. And very happily so. So that's foolish. Better to get out. One thinks himself very clever throughout his life if he is able to leave behind him a great asset of wealth for his children. And to achieve this temporary benefit, He takes the risk of all sinful activities without knowledge that such activities will keep him perpetually bound by the shackles of material bondage. Due to this polluted mentality and due to material sins, the aggregate combination of living entities appears to be bluish. Such an impetus of activity for fruitive results is made possible by the dictation of the external energy of the Lord. Kala. Kala also means time. So the living entities were within the Lord, but it is time for the creation. So very interesting description of the creation. Let's see how much we hear. Now, the subtle subject matter of creation, of which the Lord's attention was fixed, was agitated by the material mode of passion. And thus the subtle form of creation pierced through his abdomen. So this is the Lord desired this to happen. And through his abdomen, the subtle form of creation came, which was the totality of the material elements, etc. Piercing through, the sum total of the fruitive activity of the living entities took the shape of a bud of a lotus flower generated from the personality of Vishnu. So the stem of the lotus came out of the Lord, and then on that stem, that lotus budded. And then, by his supreme will, it illuminated everything, like the sun, and dried up the vast water of devastation. Because it was time for the creation. So this is Garbhadakshay Vishnu, the one who is the one who is lying down within the womb of the material universe. Into that lotus flower, Lord Vishnu personally entered as the Supersoul. So he enters again as the Supersoul. And when it was thus impregnated with all the modes of material energy, so we heard the same talking about how the Lord enters into each universe in the last chapter, or the chapter before the last chapter. How the Lord enters into each universe, and until the Lord enters, the universe cannot develop. So when the universe, which is the universal lotus flower, when it was impregnated with the modes of material energy, this is Daivyesha, the Lord's energy, the personality of Vedic wisdom, whom we call the self-born, that is Lord Brahma, was generated. Prabhupada explains in the purport. Now, the last line of the purport I'm going to read first, and then you have to listen very carefully to the purport, and you'll be able to understand the last line when we read it the second time. From this description, we have the conception of three. First, the gross virat form, that means the universal form. The subtle Hiranyagarbha, the subtle material creation, which is the glowing, effulgent lotus flower, and the material creative force, Brahma. So this subtle, the gross Virata form, or the universe, the subtle Hiranyagarbha, and the material creative force, Brahma. Now we'll read the purport and we can hear the description of each of those three. The lotus flower is the universal Virata form. So this is gross. Usually, the universal form is subtle in one sense, but because it's composed of gross matter, it's the Lord's so-called form in gross matter, it is considered gross. The lotus flower is the universal virat form, or the gigantic form of the Lord in the material world. So it's not exactly the Lord's form, because the Lord has no material form, but it's like a gross form of the Lord, in the sense of, like, if we could say that I am a soul, and this is also Atma, this is also me, but this isn't exactly me, but it's a manifestation, temporarily, of me, at this particular time, a gross body. So the universal form, so we also sometimes say the body is imaginary, but actually in another sense it's a real manifestation of me at this particular time, of my improper desires at this particular time, something like that. So that it becomes amalgamated, or amalgamated means combined, something like combined, in the personality of Godhead, Vishnu, in his abdomen at the time of the dissolution. And it becomes manifest at the time of creation. This is due to Garbhadakshay Vishnu, who enters into each of the universes. So far we've heard of the universal form, the Bharata, which is the lotus which comes out of the Lord, and that material energy enters into the Lord, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, at the time of dissolution. And he enters into the universe. In this form is the sum total of all the fruit of activities of the living entities conditioned by material nature. So that's why it says in the Bhagavad Gita that the living entities are the maintainers of the universe. The Parayam Idastvanam Prakritim Vidimeparam Jiva Bhuta Mahabaho Yedam Daryate Jagat. They are Daryate Jagat. They are the ones maintaining the universe, because the universe, in one sense, they are co-creators of the universe, because in one sense, the universe consists only of the fruit of results or the fruit of actions of the living entities. And therefore, we wonder why does Kali Yuga have to come, and why do so many horrible things have to come? It's because the living entities are forcing it to come, really. Even though it's natural that it cycles in this way, but they force it to come because the nature of their activities become more and more sinful, because the modes of nature tend to degrade and passion tends to cause ignorance. And that's why Kali Yuga has to come. But it comes naturally in cycles. So in this form is the sum total of the fruit of activities of the living entities conditioned by material nature. And the first of them, namely Brahma, so there's another point that was out of the three. So actually this is the third point. This firstborn living entity, unlike all the others, has no material father, and thus he is called selfborn or Swayambhu. He goes to sleep with Narayan at the time of devastation, and when there is another creation, he is born in this way. From this description, we have the conception of three: the gross Virata form, the subtle Hiranyagarbha, and the material creative force, Brahma. So the subtle Hiranyagarbha in this context seems to mean Garbhadakshay Vishnu. That he enters the universe and therefore empowers it to create. He enters the lotus flower, it actually says. It says that he enters each of the universes. Into that the verse said, into that universal lotus flower, Lord Vishnu personally entered as the super soul. So that's how he entered. So gross meaning material and subtle meaning spiritual. So anyway, that's the explanation of these three. So the gross Virata form, the subtle Hiranyagarbha, and the material creative force, Brahma. So Brahma, born out of the lotus flower, so he's come out, he has his own, he's, generally Lord Brahma is an exalted devotee, most exalted pure devotee. So he has a particular mission, and that mission is to create the universe on behalf of the Lord, so that the living entities can perform their activities and fulfill their desires and best go back to Godhead. So that's his service. So he's empowered by Krishna. He's the Rajaguna avatar. He carries the mode of passion, the total mode of passion with him. And that gives him the impetus to create, because creation is born of passion. So just imagine carrying with you the totality of passion. So we could not handle it, certainly, but Lord Brahma is empowered to do so as a servant. So he has this impetus to create, but as of yet he doesn't have the ability to create. But he has the desire. So when he's born out of the lotus flower, he could not see the world. He could not see anything, although he was situated on the whirl of the lotus. He therefore circumambulated all of space, and while moving his eyes in all directions, he achieved four heads in terms of the four directions. So he's trying to understand what to do, where he was situated. And his eight eyes, were generated out of this desire to see everything, so he could know what his situation was. So Lord Brahma, situated in that lotus, could not perfectly understand the creation. The lotus, he couldn't understand what existed, he couldn't understand the lotus he was sitting on, nor could he understand himself. And at the end of the millennium, the air of devastation began to move the water and the lotus in great circular waves. So this will be described again later. So he was meditating, trying to understand what to do, and great waves started occurring. Prabhupada explains about in this purport. Lord Brahma was perplexed about his creation, the lotus and the world, even though he tried to understand them for one millennium, 1,000 years, which is beyond the calculation in the solar years of human beings. No one, therefore, so this is very important for us to understand, no one, therefore, can know the mystery of the creation and cosmic manifestation simply by mental speculation. In other words, one can't understand the creation or his self in relationship to the creation by his own power, no matter how intelligent one is. The human being is so limited in his capacity that without the help of the Supreme, he can hardly understand the mystery of the will of the Lord in terms of creation, continuance and destruction. So the scientists, with their one head, or if they put all their heads together, they will have many heads, but still no matter how many heads they have, Lord Brahma had four, but no matter how many heads they have, they still, no one can understand the creation, the destruction of the universe, or how it is maintained. They'll say Newton's law of gravity or something, but why? It's not like Newton created the law of gravity, or he created any laws or anything like that. How did the laws get there? Is Newton enforcing them? Is he making sure that they work? Does he cause them to stop working? No. So who does this? So it's Krishna's law of gravity. It's Krishna's every law. The scientists study how we age. Every once in a while someone will come out with a report. Because they can't even understand why the body ages. It's because they're thinking that if we can find out why the body ages, we can put some chemicals in and stop it from aging. And then we can live forever in this body. Does that sound like a good idea? What do you think? Monkey may be able to do it, but no, not very many can do it.
Is it a curse?
Huh? No, it's a blessing, but not the greatest of blessings. I said if also. But that's what the scientists are thinking. They're trying to understand. They say, you know, some protein is breaking down or something like that, and therefore we can just add some miraculous other protein, then we'll be able to stop the... Just keep sending the checks in to us, and gradually we will stop you from aging. But what is it that makes people age? It is a law. It's a law that's unstoppable. It's Krishna's law of aging, just like it's Krishna's law of gravity. And no one can stop it. Krishna can suspend it. If he wants, he can do anything he likes. But no one else can do this. So, no one can understand how everything works, how the universe is created, how it is destroyed, how it is maintained, all the laws that are in effect. Maybe someone who's very intelligent, they can recognize some law that Krishna has created and get it named after them. But no one can actually understand some black hole of creative energy, infinitely dense in a limited space. That's some word jugglery that doesn't mean anything actually. So Brahma could not understand, nor can anyone understand. Lord Brahma, in his ignorance, contemplated, who am I that I'm situated on top of this lotus? Who am I? How did I get here? So these are the questions that make one into a spiritual seeker. How did I get here? Who am I? Suddenly I find myself in a particular body, at a particular time, with particular desires, with particular strengths, with particular weaknesses. Conscious, aware of myself. But who am I? How did I get here? So where has this lotus sprouted from? Where has this come from? There must be something downward, because he saw there was a stem. So he thought that I'm sitting on top of the lotus. The lotus is sitting on top of the stem. If I could find out where the stem leads, therefore I'll be able to find out where I came from. And therefore there must be something downward, and from that which this lotus has grown must be within the water. So that's, Prabhupada explains in the purport. This is just what the... I'll read the purport. The subject matter of the speculations of Brahma in the beginning regarding the creation of the cosmic manifestation is still a subject matter for mental speculators. They say, well, I'm sitting on this seat, and this seat is sitting on the floor, and the floor is sitting on the earth, and where is the earth situated on? What is the source of the earth? And what is the source of the source of the earth? Is the sun, maybe? And what is the source of the sun? And if I keep tracing back, I'll find out the source of everything. But we just heard that by one's power, it's not possible actually to do so. But yet, this is the subject matter for mental speculators. The most intelligent man is he who tries to find the cause of his personal existence and that of the whole cosmic creation, and thus tries to find the ultimate cause. So if you keep searching, the cause of this is this, the cause of me is my mum and dad, the cause of my mum and dad is so many other mums and dads, and the cause of all the way back. Now what is the original cause of everything? I heard Prabhupada say in a lecture that if my father is a person, and my father's father is a person, and my father's father's father is a person, and my father's 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 father is a person, all the way back, does it make any sense that the ultimate cause will be imperson? Suddenly there's an imperson, a non-person, and it gives birth to a person? Just like suddenly there is a monkey, what is it? And suddenly she looks and says, oh! How has this human come out? This is amazing. We should declare a holiday. Suddenly monkey gives birth to human. The missing link has been found, but it doesn't happen. Nor do impersons give birth to persons. The most intelligent man tries to understand this. If his attempt is properly executed with penances and perseverance, it is sure to be crowned with success. But it has to be properly executed. Brahma tried to understand by his own power, but he couldn't. So that's not the proper execution. Lord Brahma, thus contemplating, entered the water through the channel of the stem of the lotus. But in spite of entering the stem and going nearer to the navel of Vishnu, he could not trace out the root. Prabhupada's purport. By dint of one's personal endeavor, one may go nearer to the Lord, but without the Lord's mercy, one cannot reach the ultimate point. Such understanding of the Lord, actually understanding the Lord, is possible only by devotional service, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhakti Amam Abhijananti Navanyas Tasmi Tattvata. So that is the only way one actually can understand. We'll read one more verse. O Vidura, while searching in that way about his existence, Brahma reached his ultimate time, which is the eternal wheel in the hand of Vishnu, and which generates fear in the mind of living entities like the fear of death. So he actually got close enough to perceive great fear, which is an energy, it's a fear of death that comes upon one, which is actually an energy of the Lord. That's like sometimes if you go to a very high building, and you stand up on the top of it and you look over. What happens? Some kind of a fear grips you in the stomach. It's what is that? That is something like this. A great fear. It's a fear of death that comes. So Brahma went down so far and suddenly he hit that fear. And when you hit that fear, it overpowers one's thereafter, being unable to achieve the desired destination, he retired from such searching and came back again to the top of the lotus. Thus, controlling all objectives, he concentrated his mind on the Supreme Lord. So he gave up his other attempt to find out by his own power, and he just began to concentrate on the Lord. So this concentration on the mind of the Lord, called samadhi, even if one is unaware of whether his actual nature is personal, impersonal, or localized, that means Brahma, Paramatma, or Bhagavan, concentration of the mind on the Supreme is certainly a form of devotional service. To cease from personal sense endeavors and to concentrate on the Supreme Cause is a kind of self, is a sign of self-surrender. And when self-surrender is present, that is a sure sign of devotional service. Each and every living entity needs to engage in devotional service to the Lord if he wishes to understand the ultimate cause of his existence. So Brahma gave up his own personal endeavor and he began to focus his mind on Krishna. And at the end of Brahma's 100 years, and that was the tapasya that he performed. He focused his mind on Krishna, meditating on the Lord. And at the end of Brahma's 100 years, when his meditation was complete, he developed the required knowledge, and as a result, he could see in his heart the Supreme within himself, whom he could not see before with the greatest endeavor. He had looked and looked and looked and looked everywhere, tried so many ways with his foreheads and great intelligence to understand his source, but to no avail. But then, by engaging in devotional service, he acquired the required knowledge, and thus at that time he could understand everything. Prabhupada explains in the purport. The Supreme Lord can be experienced only through the process of devotional service and not by one's personal endeavor and mental speculation. The age of Brahma is calculated in terms of Divya Yuga years, which are distinct from the solar years of human beings. The Divya years are calculated in the Bhagavad Gita, Sahasra Yuga Parijantam. Brahma's one day is equal to 1,000 times the aggregate of the four yugas, 4,300,000 years. On that basis, Brahma meditated for 100 years before he could understand the supreme cause of all causes. And then he wrote the Brahma Samhita, which is approved and recognized by Lord Chaitanya, and in which he sings, Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. One has to wait for the mercy of the Lord before one can either render service unto him or know him as he is. Very important point. So Brahma, finally, when he was mature in his devotion and had received the mercy of the Lord, then he could see the Lord. And what did he see? Previously, he looked at the water and couldn't see anything, practically speaking. But now, when he was mature in his devotion, everything was different. Hoi gai. Brahma could see that on the water there was a gigantic lotus-like white bedstead, the body of Sheshanaga on which the personality of Godhead was lying alone. The whole atmosphere was illuminated by the rays of the jewels bedecking the hood of Sheshanaga. And that illumination dissipated all the darkness of those regions. The luster of the transcendental body of the Lord mocked the beauty of the coral mountain. The coral, what color is coral? Maybe there's more than one kind. Yeah? Yeah, there's whitish and pinkish. Maybe bluish too, for all I know. Sahasra? How many kinds of coral are there? So many. Huh? Black coral. Okay. The coral mountain is very beautifully dressed by the evening sky, but the yellow dress of the Lord mocked its beauty. So it must be darkish, maybe, because it's compared to the Lord. There is gold on the summit of the mountain, but the Lord's helmet, bedecked with jewels, mocked it. The mountain's waterfalls, herbs, etc., with a panorama of flowers, seem like garlands, but the Lord's gigantic body and his hands and legs, decorated with jewels, pearls, tulsi leaves, and flowers, garlands, mock the scene on the mountain. So this is metaphor. Comparing, so we can't understand what Krishna is like, what the Lord is like, because he is unknown. Not unknowable, but unknown to us at this point. But there are certain things that are known. We've all seen mountains, we've seen flowers, we've seen jewels, we've seen this and that, waterfalls. So by comparing the unknown to the known, the beauty of the known, we can get a glimpse of what the beauty of the unknown was like. His transcendental body, unlimited in length and breadth, occupied the three planetary systems, upper, middle, and lower. His body was self-illuminated by unparalleled dress and variegatedness and was properly ornamented. The Lord showed his lotus feet by raising them. His lotus feet are the source of all awards achieved by devotional service free from material contamination. Such awards are for those who worship him in pure devotion. The splendor of the transcendental rays from his moon-like toenails and fingernails appeared like the petals of flowers. In the purport, I'll read some. The Lord fulfills the desires of everyone just as one desires. Pure devotees are interested in achieving the transcendental service of the Lord, which is none different from him. Therefore, the Lord is the only desire of the pure devotees, and devotional service is the only spotless process for achieving his favor. Sri Rupa Goswami says in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that pure devotional service is jnana kama anavrita. It is without any tinge of speculative knowledge and fruitive activities. Such devotional service is able to award the pure devotee the highest results, namely direct association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. According to the Gopal Tapani Upanishad, the Lord showed one of his many thousands of petals of his lotus feet. It is said, Brahmano sav anavartam me dhyayata stuta paradhante so buddhyatkopovesho me prustat dvir babuva. After penetrating for millions of years, Lord Brahma could understand the transcendental form of the Lord as Sri Krishna in the dress of a cowherd boy. So Jiva Goswami also points this out in his Sandarbhas, that what Lord Brahma saw in the Chattasloki Bhagavatam, and Prabhupada also mentioned it in some of the parts of the purports to the Chattasloki Bhagavatam, that what Lord Brahma actually saw was Shyamasundar. And thus, he saw the form of Sri Krishna in the dress of a cowherd boy, and thus he recorded his experience in the Brahma Samhita, Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. So going back to the description of the Lord. He also acknowledged the service of the devotees and vanquishes their distress by his beautiful smile. The reflection of his face, decorated with earrings, was so pleasing because it dazzled with the rays from his lips and the beauty of his nose and eyebrows. O dear Vidura, the Lord's waist was covered with a yellow cloth resembling the saffron dust of the Kadamba flower, and it was encircled by a well-decorated belt. His chest was decorated with a Srivats marking and a necklace of unlimited value. As a sandalwood tree is decorated with fragrant flowers and branches, the Lord's body was decorated with valuable jewels and pearls. He was the self-situated tree, the Lord of all others in the universe, and as sandalwood tree is covered with many snakes, so the Lord's body was also covered by the hoods of Ananta. Like a great mountain, the Lord stands as the abode for all moving and non-moving living entities. He is the friend of the snakes because that Lord Ananta is his friend. As a mountain has thousands of golden peaks, so the Lord was seen with the thousands of golden helmeted hoods of Ananta Nag. And as a mountain is sometimes filled with jewels, so also his transcendental body was fully decorated with valuable jewels. As a mountain is sometimes submerged in the ocean water, so the Lord is sometimes submerged in the water of devastation. Lord Brahma thus looking upon the Lord in the shape of a mountain, concluded that he was Hari, the personality of Godhead. He saw that the garland of flowers on his chest glorified him with Vedic wisdom and sweet songs and looked very beautiful. He was protected by the Sudarshan Chakra, the wheel for fighting, and even the sun, moon, air, fire could not have access to him. When Lord Brahma, the maker of the universal destination, thus saw the Lord, he simultaneously glanced over creation. Lord Brahma saw the lake in Lord Vishnu's navel and the lotus flower, as well as the devastating water, the drying air in the sky. All became visible to him. So he then, after being able to see the Lord, being empowered by the Lord in that way, being blessed by the Lord in that way, then he could understand how the lotus flower was spread throughout the creation. He could see everything. And he was surcharged with the motive passion. He became inclined to create, and after seeing the five causes of creation indicated by the personality of Godhead, he began to offer his respectful prayers on the path of the creative mentality. So we'll start, even we're going ahead a day, but we'll start Brahma's prayers tomorrow. Now this is a very wonderful chapter with many wonderful verses in it and many wonderful purports. So we'll begin that tomorrow. So Lord Brahma, after, just imagine, he had been searching, terrified, all alone, and then he performed austerities and meditated for 1,000 years, and then suddenly he saw the Lord in all his beauty like a great bejeweled mountain. And then he began to spontaneously offer prayers. So we'll stop here, but I just wanted to read one purport. One more purport, the one that we missed, to 27, where it described the beauty of the Lord's smile, which vanquishes the distress of his devotees. Here's the purport. Devotional service to the Lord is very much obliging to him. It makes the Lord obliged. There are many transcendentalists in different fields of spiritual activities. But devotional service to the Lord is unique. Devotees do not ask anything from the Lord in exchange for their service. Even the most desirable liberation is refused by devotees. Kimanyai means, what is the use of anything other than the direct being with Krishna and direct service to Him? Devotees do not ask anything from the Lord in exchange for their service. Even the most desirable liberation is refused by devotees, although offered by the Lord. Thus the Lord becomes a kind of debtor to the devotees, and He can only try to repay the devotee's service with His ever-enchanting smile. The devotees are ever satisfied by the smiling face of the Lord, and they become enlivened. And by seeing the devotees so enlivened, the Lord Himself is further satisfied. So there is continuous transcendental competition between the Lord and His devotees by such reciprocation of service and acknowledgement. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Lord Brahma ki jai, Sisi Radha Shyamasandhu ki jai. Okay, so tomorrow, Lord Brahma's prayers.